Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 115 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. On today's episode, I have the absolute pleasure of talking to one of the most beautiful people I've met in a long time, inside and out. That is the legend Mark Brand. Mark is a social impact entrepreneur. I had no idea what that means, but Mark describes it perfectly. He is a semi-retired rap DJ, and he's also a sober guy. On this episode, Mark walks us through his journey of life and finding his passion, and he even has a tip to help you find yours. So grab a pen and paper, listen up. Let's get into it. The holidays are here. Don't wait for a new year, new you. See what you have to gain by going booze-free for 30 days by taking 30 Days to Gain Booze-Free Challenge. When you sign up, you will receive daily emails of motivation, education, and inspiration delivered right to your inbox. And you will have two daily exercises to complete to keep you accountable. If you want to see what life was like without booze, this is the time to do it. Give yourself a booze-free holiday season. Head to asobergirlsguide.com and sign up today. Mr. Mark Brand, I am so excited to speak with you today. How are you?
So well. Super happy to be here with you as well.
You know, just talking to you in the beginning, you kind of remind me of like the modern day Mr. Big from Sex and the City. Have you ever heard? Have you ever got that?
I have not. What was that? What's that actor's name? Mike? Is it Michael?
Chris North.
Yes, North? I remember because he was in Law and Order when I was like five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I never watched Sex and the City, so you have to give me some context.
Okay, so Mr. Big was. He was like kind of like the dream guy, like back in the 2000s, right? Like he was the main characters, like on again, off again, like, you know, it was looking back at it. It was like a toxic relationship, but, but that's why I say you're the modern man of, of Mr. Big.
You don't know me. I mean, I could very much be that. I try not to be.
Well, and that's why you're the modern version. You try not, you're conscious about it. You're mindful. Whereas, I mean, Mr. Big, maybe not so aware, let's say.
New York is a complicated city.
Yeah. And so Mr. Big was like this like financial guy, like really, you know, appealing to women like in that era, you know, in the early 2000s. And I feel like you are the modern version of that, you know, being a social impact entrepreneur, which I definitely want to get into because I'm not quite sure what that even means. And we need to
Sometimes
talk about it.
I don't either. I can't wait.
Great. So you're like the modern, updated, aware, woke, if you will, version of Mr. Big. You are our 20. Well, you know what? Let's just go 2021. Mr.
A better vintage. It's a much better vintage. And I appreciate the words. And you know, I will try to live up to the stage that you've set in these next 38 minutes and 12 seconds.
There is nothing to live up to because you're just naturally it. You naturally embody him.
Sarah Jessica Parker, watch out.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get back to what a social impact entrepreneur is, because you're quite the mover and shaker in Vancouver and all over the world. Like, can you tell us what that means?
Yeah, and so I guess maybe I'll just start with my work. And in Vancouver, I opened my first restaurant restaurateur. I'm a cook as well. I didn't ply that trade here in Vancouver cooking until like 2015 or 2016, but opened my first restaurant in the downtown east side in 2006, named after my mom, Benita, just here on my neck as well. And my journey sort of taking me into all sorts of different things. So before that, in former life, I was a funk rap soul DJ in Australia for almost 10 years. And prior to that, I was a cook. And so food, entertaining, convening, it's always been at the heart and sort of the blood of what I do. I really enjoy getting people together and opening conversation, opening their eyes to things. And whether that be culinary or music, and now very much into social purpose and impact, where my journey's gotten to. And so that journey in the downtown east side and in Vancouver and Gastown led me to open 9 or 10 businesses within about a 6-year span. So from a sushi restaurant to a retail clothing outlet, a gallery, a live music venue, a ramen house, all sorts of things, all within 3 blocks, which then were sort of the, I guess it would say, you could say it was my G League, to figure out what I actually wanted to do in the world, which is feed, train, and employ as many people who are living in the margins as possible. Mm. And in 2010, 2011, I took over the historic Save-On Meats building, 21,000 square feet with my team. And we hacked it into what was known as one of the first social impact incubators. Right? So what does that mean? I hate jargon. I hate jargon. But sometimes it's all we've got, right? Like language is challenging. And with my work, if you touch it and you feel it, which is what I want you to do at all times, it's easier to explain. Mm-hmm. But what it is it was a 21,000 square foot building that we hacked into a place where young businesses working in agriculture, working in social purpose. There was an organization that was training people how to box. We put them on the fourth floor in an old meat locker. I had artist studios. We had urban agrarians in there. Fledgling Soul Food was in a meat locker with me in an office. And then we were cranking out meals for people in the neighborhood. And for those of you who are not familiar with the downtown east side, it is the largest open air drug market, one of the densest areas of homelessness, mental illness, and visible despair in the world, not just in Canada, not just in North America, but globally. So we're smack dab in the middle of that. And I have been for 15 years. So we create this thing, we start working all these different archetypes, and then we start getting visitors. And the visitors who are coming to the work are the mayor of Germany, who's like,
random.
Hey, what is this? And can you teach me? I was like, I'm not really sure what it is, but this is what it does. Mm-hmm. And she's blown away. And then we ended up doing a reality show for the Oprah Winfrey Network in and around the work. And it just became this part of like focus for us, because we realized really quickly that the energy we felt for doing this work genuinely was propelling the impossible. Mm. Because what we had taken on and what I ended up holding the bag for was just so ridiculous on paper. It bucked against everything that made sense. Location, the worst in the city, arguably one of the worst in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
The business model, it's a food primary business. People don't want to come down there.
Yeah.
Right? What, like all of the things that you do a check mark, it didn't make sense, but it works. And it works because we consistently are iterating. And iterating just means, what are we going to do now? Right in the front of it now, I built my own, for those Spike Lee fans, like Do the Right Thing radio station. We have over 40 shows in the front window. We changed the butcher shop into like a tasting room for my brewery on the Sunshine Coast, Persephone. We moved that into a more inclusive space to hold small community gatherings. We have a trans drag show biweekly when the world opens back up. It is a space that consistently reinvents itself to be truly in service to the people of Vancouver who do not have a space otherwise. And outside of that, we pump out about 1,100 meals a day that go into single room occupancy hotels, SROs, transitional housing for people coming out of recidivism, jail, coming out of street entrenchment, and really trying to transition back into society. And that program will hit 3 million meals this year before we close out. So these are things I give you this contextually, because everything I've ever learned as an entrepreneur, as a convener, as a speaker, as a moderator, all of the things that I do, they're a toolkit, right? So when people are like, you're jack of all trades, I'm like, no, I like to learn a lot, and I've never stopped. And so I had the distinct pleasure of being a professor of innovation. I taught at the Stanford D School. I taught at USC. I taught the course called Innovation Dynamics for the Doctoral Social Work Program, because all of this stuff is the same.
Right.
They're just in different boxes.
Yes.
And it's all valuable. And what we're learning more than anything in what you do with your life is you share experience lived that then helps people see themselves in it versus it being other.
Yes.
There's no us in them. There's only us.
Yeah.
That's all we got.
Yeah.
Right. So I hope that gives a little bit of scope as to what I do in Vancouver on a global scale. A Better Life Foundation, which is my charity in Canada, also operates on the US side. We operate in Brownsville. We're based out of Queens. We work in, you know, Brooklyn. We work in Harlem. I sit on the New York City Food Bank's Culinary Council. We work in Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles. All of that work is in and around BIPOC communities, particularly focused on youth and training and empowerment. So it's the same sort of work, but just meeting people where they are in their communities. And then and globally, I get the distinct pleasure to be a chef for lots of different organizations, the Future Food Institute, the FAO of the United Nations. I work with them on food waste. And last year we established September 29th as Global Food Waste Day. And all of those different pieces, and I'll keep saying this, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
It's about shedding light into the corners where people think that they can't make change. If I can, if the UN lets me in the building,
just
literally anybody. If you're putting your heart, your passion, your energy into something, and you really just think about it. Not what other people have told you, but what you bring to the table. Success is in front of you.
That's so interesting. It sounds like, and I love how you kind of just said like everything is the same, but you know, you being able to pivot and change and make these adjustments as you go, it sounds like you're a really good listener.
It's critical.
Like you
skill.
Have to be, right?
Critical skill.
How do you fine tune that skill? Or how did you fine tune your skills?
I mean, alcohol can start to come to play right in this part of the conversation.
Mm.
So can caffeine. So can narcotics, whether the ones that we deem legal or the ones that we deem illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prescription or otherwise, all of it removes us from our, what we could call our soul or our center. And we use it as distraction. Everything in moderation for some people. I don't have that moderation.
No.
I don't know where that off switch is.
Yeah.
You know, it's a week later and I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. What are we doing now? And that's just my personality. And because I have three main forms of what would be diagnosed as mental illness, because 25% of the planet does, those things are triggered heavily by exterior inputs. And so those inputs make it impossible for any of us to hear each other.
Totally.
Because nonverbal communication is, in my books, 80% of the conversation. If I'm sitting here with you and there is not a cue I am missing. I'm only here with you. My phone's nowhere near me. There's no audio. There's nothing else but this moment in this conversation because it's an important one, but they all are.
Yeah.
And we walk through our life half connected to 50 different things.
Yeah.
Right. And we miss it.
Yeah.
You're missing it. You're consistently worrying about what happened or planning for what's next. And then you miss the whole journey, the difficult parts, the hard conversations that become easier when you're present. Because when you're present, you're not catching up to what's been said. You're just there.
Totally.
It's not hard, right? To just really give yourself to it. And so distractions for me are just not, it's not an option. I told you the things that I do and the work and the people that I serve.
Yeah.
That is greater and higher than self.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to always be. So I have a distinct advantage in my sobriety, which is I have 1,000 people a day that genuinely count on me, plus. And my sobriety is directly linked into the great impact that will either have or not have. I have incredible teams of support and wonderful partners, et cetera. So it's not centered around me by any means. I decenter myself from all of our organizations.
Yeah.
But it very much relies on me to bring all of my love and passion to support them
Yeah.
In doing the work to support the innovation, the ingenuity, the high level partnerships. And you can't do that shit when you're not in your right mind.
No. And
hungover is not in your right mind.
Oof. No, it is not. Not at all. I totally understand that. And like, why would you want to waste it? Like, why would you want to miss it? I know some people, you know, aren't as fortunate to have maybe found a passion or something that drives them. Like, it sounds like when you talk about this, like your eyes just light up. Like, I can see like, this is in you. It's just naturally who you are and what you want to be doing with your life. But a lot of people don't have that passion. They don't know. They haven't tapped into that maybe yet.
Yeah. And so I feel called to share this because I think any conversation that somebody is giving us their time to listen to us, mm-hmm. we should give them something. So let's give them something right now. And this is a very important tool. Mm. I think it's the most important tool. And it's one that I'm working on structuring into a publication that's almost finished. And that I'm going to share as wide and as far as I can. So I appreciate the prompt and I don't think it comes by accident. So I didn't know what I was passionate about or why, but more importantly, why?
Yeah. Right?
So I start doing the work in the downtown East Side. We're on the front page of every publication, nationally, internationally, you know, we're in Monocle, we're in everything.
Yeah.
And the question is, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Everybody's really curious. I'm like, 'cause somebody has to. That's my defensive, aggressive, like toxic masculinity answer. Because somebody has to.
Yeah.
Government's not doing it.
Yeah.
Companies aren't doing it. Charities are failing. Public citizens don't give a shit. Well, yeah. You just vilified everybody. That's not helpful. And that's not the answer because it's not true. That's not why.
Yeah.
But the reason we have so much trouble, first of all, why we use all these different escapes is because of our own trauma. Mm-hmm. And we play a game of competition with trauma, which is that I didn't have it as bad as X, therefore I didn't have it bad. Bullshit.
It's yeah.
Utter bullshit. And people are like, oh, I'm not, you know, I slept in my car for a couple of months, but I wasn't homeless. Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Yeah, you absolutely were. If you slept in your car for a couple of nights, you were homeless.
Yes.
If you didn't have a fixed address for any amount of time whatsoever in your life, you were homeless and it leaves a scar.
Yeah.
And you know, what does it feel like? If you've run from an abusive relationship, your physical being is in danger. Your emotional being is in danger. Mm-hmm. If you've not known where your next meal's coming from, 75% of people in North America have experienced that at least once.
Wow.
That's not rare.
No.
It's the human condition at this point because capitalism has destroyed us. Now, if you can relate to that and own it and not worry that it will damage the particular container that you've put forth to the world, that it doesn't bludgeon that it doesn't bruise you, that it in fact empowers you, and you can own that narrative and any of the naysayers that come along with it, your power is infinite in that space. Because there's no closet, there's nothing in there, there's nothing to point to.
Right.
You know, I had somebody got a real bee in their bonnet with me, a local journalist, and they tried to do an investigative journalism piece on me. They're not a journalist, so it's pretty challenging for them, I'm sure. But they went into it for about 3 months, and what they came out with was almost nothing, but they insisted on writing a piece anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the most liberating moments of my life. And I was like, yeah, I've said all the things that you want to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you've been on my socials.
There are no skeletons in this closet.
I mean, I'm kind of sad there isn't any left to share. There's more. Yeah. I mean, of course there is. There always is. But there's nothing that has any power over me whatsoever. Because if it does, it reduces my ability to show up for what I give a shit about. So you can't hide from it. You have to face all this stuff because ultimately you're only lying to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear that statement a lot, but what is the fact of it? If you feel unsettled in your internal being and your internal makeup because of something, whether that be falling out with somebody who you know that will like never, let's say that it never comes back to a place and you still have something you want to share it. Mm-hmm. It's not a game of chess.
Yeah.
Right? Like just literally share it and expect nothing. Sometimes magic happens, sometimes nothing happens, but at least it's not yours. And you know, the common trope that goes around the internet is that person's living rent-free in your head. Mm-hmm. They are.
Yeah.
Get them out of there. there's only space for you at the moment when you're growing, right? When you got to figure out what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So here's a Venn diagram. And for those of you unfamiliar with that terminology, imagine three circles that cross over slightly. And in the very center is you. You are the center of that circle. What are the three concentric things on the outside that cross over to make up what you are going to do in the world is the question. So I start asking myself the tough questions around, why do I care so much about poverty and homelessness? Man, my whole life is why. Mm. My family's generational lives is why. My heritage is why. It's all living inside this container until it's fixed.
Right.
And so if I'm working on fixing it, I'm doing great. So there's my, what do I care about and why? That's your first circle.
Okay.
And you can care about abandoned dogs in Mexico. And if that lights you up, they need your help. Trust. There's more than enough causalities for you to get behind. And you have to get behind the one you care about, not the one that somebody tells you you should care about. It has to be yours. And it could be real odd to you. The odder the better. You're going to dig in, right? When I was running all of these businesses, we're 16.8 million revenue company, zero investment, every award under the sun. The most miserable I've ever been in my life. Oh. When they say money isn't the answer, I can say from having zero to having lots of it and now having just enough to get by, it's completely irrelevant to your actual motivation. We're just trained to believe that we care about it more than we actually do.
Yeah.
And we're put into this zero sum game of debt, et cetera. We'll leave that alone. So you're passionate about this thing, right? The secondary thing is, what's a skill you wish you could use more? A skill, not something somebody told you you were good at, although it could be the same.
Yeah.
Not a job you once had, although also could be the same for me. It was cooking. I started at 14.
Yeah.
I went back to it. People were shocked. I was like, I've been doing it for 30 years. Surprise. so it could be something that I realized that was my tool. I could get people together. I had lots of friends who were musicians who people knew of. They had some celebrity and notoriety. I could bring people together, cook for them because they were surprised I was cooking for them. Yeah. Even more surprised when it was good. The first couple of times they're like, wow, this is really good. I'm like, I've been doing this my whole life.
Shocking.
And so when I realized that was a superpower of mine, I was like, holy shit, I have you contained. I can tell you all the stuff I care about now and you're listening.
Yeah.
And why are you listening? Because you're well fed and you care and you feel looked after and the hospitality's on 10.
Yeah. Ooh,
I'm onto something here, right? So I was like, okay, that's my skill.
Okay.
I'm not going to be the CEO anymore. I don't want to be the CEO.
Yeah.
I want to be the advocate, cook, and of course, I'll still go over all the books and everything else. But forward facing, I want to do this part now.
Yeah.
And so I had to blow up my life. I literally had to blow the whole thing up. I was like, oh, well, I guess I don't do business anymore. Of course I still do business, but I'm not going to open new things. I'm going to get rid of all the things that don't serve the people and planet first. All of that transition took me 2.5 years.
That's
opening
quick.
A business. Yeah. I mean,
you cut the fat.
Try and move as fast as I can. Right.
Yeah.
To get to it. So that's the thing. What's your skill? And yours could be anything. Mm-hmm. You could be like, oh, I really love accounting, but nobody needs that. Trust me, they do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a UX designer. That's not helpful. Oh my God. Have you seen a social purpose website? Like, very important skills. Everybody's skill is needed in this army. Mm-hmm. The third part of the diagram is, I think, the most critical. How much time do you have?
Mm.
And asking yourself that question in general just feels super uncomfortable because their guilt radar goes all the way up. You're like, when I'm not on Instagram, when I'm not on Twitter, when I'm not on TikTok, when I'm not on Facebook, when I'm not... Yeah. All of those things, when I'm not binging Netflix, you shouldn't feel guilty about any of those things. You should check your moderation. It's not good for your mental health, but you shouldn't feel guilty about the things that you do as coping mechanisms or to connect in a pandemic in particular. But how much time could you shave out of there? Mm. Is it an hour? A month? Is it two? If that feels comfortable, start there. Don't push it.
It's funny when you said, like, how much time do you have? I literally just... I don't know why, but it just popped into my head. I'm like, the rest of my life.
Ooh, bars.
Like I wasn't even thinking, like, you know, daily, hourly, you know, I wasn't even breaking it down. I'm just like, oh, like the rest of my life.
This has been a great conversation. Thank you all for listening. There's nothing more powerful than that statement right there. We're good.
Whoa.
real though. It's yeah. so real. And we have no idea how long that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's infinite.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Like, do you have an idea? Okay. This is a little bit of a morbid and super off topic question, but do you have like an idea of when like you think you might die?
It is very morbid and we'll go right into it. I'll finish okay. the Venn and then we'll okay. go into it. Cause yes, I do. I have a very specific timeline given to me by doctors. So in the okay. Venn diagram, you now have why, what mm-hmm. do I care about? Why do I care about it? And the whys are going to be uncomfortable. You get them. What's the skill? I'm cooking. I care about poverty. And I have 2 hours that by changing my life is going to give me 20 hours that by continuing to change my life is going to give me the whole thing.
Mm. Okay.
So you readapt your life into a place. And I promise you, there's only one thing that I know of in the world that's going to make you feel better than volunteering. And that's being a parent. Like, honestly, there's nothing stronger than your connectivity to actually being in service to people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everybody knows it when I say it. They're like, I know. I'm like, why aren't you doing it then? Because if we all did it, these problems would go away. And I know that just seems like a sweeping generalization, but it's true. If I can feed 3 million people with some support, but not a whole lot,
yeah,
we can really just do this thing. And it also makes you feel incredible. So yeah. I encourage you when you're like, what, you know, where is that? I think that that's a little exercise you can run for yourself. So getting into the dark
side. Great.
Stuff.
Come to the dark side.
Yo, so why I have to leave Australia mm-hmm. as a very successful DJ, married, beautiful home, everything I've ever wanted in life, literally. Mm-hmm. I get to play with all my heroes. I'm touring with Gangstar, with Sugar Hill Gang, with like all of my, like literally the guy Public Enemy, the people I grew up listening to are now in my sphere. I'm like, I did it. You know, yeah. it took me 15 years, but I made it.
Yeah.
And I love my life. And I got diagnosed with polycystic kidney disease, which is hereditary. And my mom has it. And my aunt passed from it. My grandfather passed from it. And I'm the last in the line of our family that has it, of all of the cousins. I'm the only one. I get diagnosed. Of course, all sorts of stuff happens to my mental health. But the country says to me, you can either sign off on your medical care for the rest of your life, meaning you'll have to pay for it all, or right. you can get out.
What?
I was like, cool. How long do I have? And they were like, how about 8 weeks? Yeah. So my visa basically got pulled. I had to sell my house. I lost my shirt and everything, like basically lost all of our savings, lost everything that we had, and got given a death sentence. So they were like, you'll be dializing within probably, you know, 5 to 7 years approximately. And if you don't get a donor, you know how it goes. So I was like, I know how it goes. Bedside manner and doctors.
Gosh.
Like, cool. So you've just said, I've lost my, all of everything I built here.
Yeah.
I'm now all of my money, which meant something to me at the time. Yeah. And now I'm going to die by the time I'm 40 is essentially what you're saying. Or like 37 or something along those lines, 38.
Right.
They were like, well, I mean, you could live a long, prosperous life, but you know, you have the aggressive type of PKD and you know, we don't have a lot of research on it. Not a lot of money is being spent researching it. So, you know, the surgeries don't work. We know that. And they just continued to give me like,
the worst
news and advice ever. There's a happy ending here.
Okay.
And so
I'm regretting asking this question.
I was supposed to be here. I was supposed to be here.
Yeah.
There's no question that I wasn't supposed to do this work in the downtown east side. I mean, it's not up for debate.
Yeah.
Like I didn't, if I'd stayed there and been a DJ, I literally didn't have any impact in my brain aside from making people happy. And that's, you know what? It's enough, but it wasn't my journey. This yeah. was all part of it.
Yeah.
So I get here and I get this nephrologist, my kidney doctor. And he's like, yeah, you seem to be in actually pretty decent shape. Like we'll keep a close monitor on you. I am 45 this year. I do not dialyze.
Woo.
My blood pressure is a absolutely spotless 118 over 78 to 79 every single day. I have 15 to 16 hours of energy a day. I feel like I'm getting younger physically.
Whoa.
All of it is there. My heart's never been in better shape. My lungs have never been in better shape. My liver and kidney function is high considering where I am.
Yeah.
And I'm a case study.
Whoa.
I don't fuck with modern medicine.
Yeah.
I don't believe them. I don't believe in it. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Stick me. The second this is ready, let's go. You know, I got literally yellow fever, malaria, polio, all these when I was 15, 16, traveling to Africa. Like, I believe in this, in the science.
Yeah.
I just don't believe in the death sentence.
Yeah.
I've seen people recover from things that are inexplicable, and my trajectory makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it makes all the sense in the world to me. So I live every wow. single day like it's a gift, because it is. It literally is given back to me.
Yeah.
I didn't have these years, and now I have them. And so I'm squeezing everything I can out of them. And sobriety is a similar thing. Because you look back, I mean, you can imagine where I went to as an alcoholic and as an addict when I found that out.
Yeah.
I wasn't a whole lot of fun to be around. You know, yeah. It goes without saying that marriage didn't work. I saw that ex-wife 3 days ago. She's incredible and a great human and one of my best friends. But like, I was impossible. Yeah. And, you know, when somebody tells you everything that you believe and everything that you've already inherently known in your body, we have these moments. And I think this is a perfect way to segue into, it's okay to struggle with addiction. Mm. And it's almost in some instances necessary to see exactly how beautiful your life is.
Yeah.
It's important. And it happens. We are marketed to. We really are. We're sold everything at all times that will hurt us.
Yeah.
From the food that we put in our body to the alcohol that we drink innocuously at every single gathering and every day.
Even to the thoughts that we think.
It's all there.
You know, like just perpetuating those stories of avoidant behavior, avoidant thoughts, like one after the other. And like alcohol, drugs, you know, relationships can perpetuate that story. Just keeping those guards up, like keeping yourself safe. Mm-hmm. Don't be vulnerable. Like, stay in this comfort zone. Yeah. Whoa. Okay. So that rocked your world. I'm kind of glad I asked that question now, because that was a really amazing story and how everything kind of came to fruition for you.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many other winding roads that lead me to sleeping on a couch in his van and attempting to take my life and all sorts of other things that occurred in between, you know, the guy who stands in front of you today.
Yeah.
But all of it was supposed to happen the way it did. And I think we look back at those things in this deep regret space, and it's almost a pain that we can't get past, right? That we hold, that it's like, you are not that person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love some therapy friends of mine who are always like, which Mark is talking? Is it 15-year-old Mark? Is it 32-year-old Mark? Or is it, you know, 45-year-old Mark? Which one is talking right now? And I'm like, yo, don't. Ooh. Now 15-year-old Mark is definitely talking. You're going to get slapped up. And it's Aww. To notice and to honor, to really honor those past selves, like drunk Mark.
Yeah.
I had some of the greatest moments of my life, super intoxicated. Some of the greatest like successes of my life, like playing, you know, iconic DJ nights in Brooklyn, like loaded. And yeah. I remember them. And that tool or that, like that moment was what it was. Now I realize when I get to do them still, even in the pandemic, sober, how much more I can savor them, but I can still remember that energy and I can access that energy that I learned from letting go. And alcohol did that. It came with way too many consequences, but it did do that. And I think ignoring that of our past is a disservice.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just like shove it all down or feel guilty or shameful for it.
It doesn't serve you.
No, not at all.
If there's, you know, amends to be made, make them. And definitely start with yourself.
Yeah.
You got to start with you. It all has to start with you being okay with you. And, you know, one of the practices I had to get it into in the morning in my recovery was look at myself in the mirror and saying, I love you.
Ooh,
and that's fuck, tough. That uncomfortable. Like, we're Canadian. You're not allowed to love yourself. That's not, no, that's, that
no,
is
absolutely not.
Don't you dare. what that would just let your ego out of the ego closet. And then Jesus, you'd be wildly uncontrollable.
Totally.
God,
who knows forbid. What would happen? Who knows?
Next thing you know, right? But you have to start there. And you get through that discomfort and you realize what's looking back at you isn't just you. We're all completely and utterly interconnected. We talk about the mycelium of the planet, right? And we say, all the trees talk. They do. They do. So do the animals.
Yep.
And so do we.
Yes.
And so when you say, I love you, you are referring to everybody who is in your sphere and people you don't know who are. I don't want to get too far woo-woo and mess up this Mr. Big analogy. You know what I mean?
Modern-day Mr. Big. Modern-day Big goes there.
He definitely goes there. All right. I got crystals, girls. Yeah. So the thought of that and just being like, what did you do today? And so I have to, instead of thinking about what I did not accomplish every single day, we'll stop and go through and be like, you mentored this person. You did this talk. You did this work. You balanced this. This happened. You generated this revenue for the charity. You partnered with this person and you walk through it and you're like, you know what? You did a great job today. It's okay to be tired.
Yeah.
It's okay to be all these things. And you definitely don't want a Manhattan.
Nope.
Let's go to sleep. Let's go to sleep and do it all again tomorrow. But we don't have these parts of our society and put us in this repressive place.
Yeah.
Right. And so the only way that we can access that, what we think is love, which is the chemical version of it, is by inebriation. Because we don't have the practices, but the practices are coming more and more prevalent. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are into meditation and yoga and the releases of all of those things. Those are critical and thousands of years old. Like they matter and they can take you to a similar place if you dedicate yourself to them. Exercise. Lots of ex-addicts love to work out. Take that moderation too. I don't need to see your 37 pack on the internet. Yeah. Calm down. But all of these things do give you a better, cleaner, if you will, high.
Yes.
You just have to dedicate yourself to them.
Yeah. Or even just try them. Give yourself the space to try. You know, I always say like in your first like 30 days, like kind of take it as an experiment, you know, not tell yourself what you are and aren't going to do. Take it as a flow, as an experiment. And yeah, try some meditation, try some yoga. There's a reason why people keep mentioning these modalities and these practices, because something happens.
Yeah.
Something just, I don't know. It's like, it makes your brain open up. It's like this flower that just blossoms.
Definitely. And I mean, this is a talk for another time, but those of you who have experimented in any way with psychedelics or with microdosing, you know, in extreme cases that I work with, people who are coming off of opioids and heavy, heavy, heavy drugs. And psilocybin isn't, and I encourage everybody to do their research around it. And I think we can just leave it at that. But what that will do for your being is pretty spot on every time.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I would love to go into that conversation, but we don't have any more time because that's a great point. You make a really, really great point there. Mark, I have one more question.
Sure.
To anyone listening, what piece of advice would you give them if they're thinking of getting sober, if they're kind of, you know, going through it right now? What is one kind of piece of advice you could give someone listening?
I'll give a statement and then a piece of advice. You're worth it. You're absolutely worth it. You're worth every part of the most incredibly difficult thing you'll probably do. It will test all of your friendships, all of your normative behaviors, all of the things that you are used to, all of the comforts that you use alcohol or drugs for. And I promise you that the clarity that it brings is, it's so, so worth it. Now, what also happens, and this is just so important to say, is that everything you haven't faced is going to come see you.
Oh, yeah.
It's all going to come see you, and it's going to suck a lot, to the point of, I'm in my own sobriety was 3 years, 6-ish months or something, like straight edge, not an aspirin.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was like, oh, I think I'm okay. I think I'm going to try and have a drink. And my brain and my addiction It was like, yeah, of course you can. What are you talking about? It was never about the alcohol. It was your trauma. Mm. And you're working on your trauma, so you're cool.
Yeah.
Lie. Lie. And I lost control. Mm. Now, didn't hurt anybody aside from myself. And then it happened again. And then it happened again. And I have really close friends that I lean on who are also in this space, who I did not, you know, I was so ashamed. As somebody who lives like literally out loud as hard as I can, I was super ashamed. I was embarrassed of myself. I was embarrassed to be me. Like, yeah. It felt wrong. I knew that I'd missed some opportunities and I'd let some people down in my mind.
Yeah.
And then I decided to share it openly, which led you and I to meeting.
Yeah.
In a way that I was hoping could help other people. I didn't realize that that was the whole point of what was supposed to happen. And it did. Mm-hmm. And I'm now more resolute, but also kind to myself. And I do not in any way think that that's it forever. Mm-hmm. I might slip again. And if I do, I'm gonna know how to get back up.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Mark, so much for sharing your experience and your knowledge with us. I really appreciate it. It was an awesome conversation.
Honor and a pleasure to be with you. And I hope you have a wonderful and safe holiday.
How great is Mark? Are you getting Mr. Big vibes or what? Am I right or am I right? As always, thank you so much for your love and support. Couldn't do this without you. Please make sure to rate, subscribe, leave your comments. We love to hear your feedback about the podcast. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at A Sober Girl's Guide. And don't forget about the blog, your how-to tips, tricks. We keep the blog fully stocked and loaded so you don't have to be. Head to asobergirlsguide.com. We have everything from downloadable journals to worksheets, sober girl swag. If you are sick and tired of saying no to drinks this season, wear it instead. Head to asobergirlsguide.com. We have you covered. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.